Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Short but quick and sweet here, Matt. I wanted to get your thoughts on one thing before we get to our interview, our great interview with ESPN 1000's Chris Bleck. He was phenomenal. Almost an hour's worth of content for you guys. And we went through a variety of different topics, through guys that are important to this Bulls team, to the NCAA scandal, and so much more. So make sure that you skip forward to that. But Matt, I wanted to get your reaction to this, because I was listening to a podcast that Dan Dockich was on. Dan Dockich, if you don't know who he is, he runs a radio show in Indianapolis, kind of one of my favorites. He is an agitator and a guy that isn't willing to back down from a Twitter fight. That's what he's famous for. Calls games on ESPN too for the Big Ten. So if you're a college basketball fan, he's there as well. But he had one of the worst takes of all time, and he got absolutely destroyed for it. Chicago's own Jason Benetti destroyed him for it on air. He said he thought Chris Farley was not only still alive, but he said he wasn't funny at all.
Have to go to Zielinski Auto Parts and get some new brake pads there.
Is that a sponsor of the White Sox?
No, it's a Tommy Boy reference.
Is that a good... Oh, I'm sorry.
You should watch some movies every once in a while.
Tommy Boy's that big, non-funny guy. Chris Farley?
He's funny. He's very funny.
He is? Was?
Yeah, he was.
Did he pass away?
He did, yes.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
You thought he was funny?
I did. Very funny. Your sense of humor evidently has withered over time.
No, I just...
You have no defense.
You're smoking crack. Stop.
What do you think about that?
I'm sorry. He said, yeah, I saw him trending on Twitter, but I never checked in to see what it was. That was it. I'm sorry. So he thought he was still alive, and he said he thought he wasn't funny.
Now let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about.
Yes.
I don't know which one of those offends me more.
Get the world by the tail and wrap it around and pull it down and put it in my pocket.
Because Chris Farley has been dead for over 20 years now. It's actually 20th anniversary of his death was just this past December. And every day my heart aches and breaks because Chris Farley has been dead for 20 years. To say that he's not funny?
The other guy's brake pads. You're driving along, and all of a sudden the kids are yelling from the back seat, I gotta go to the bathroom, Daddy. Not now, damn it. Truck tire. I can't stop. Help! There's a cliff. And your family's screaming, oh my God, we're burning alive! No, I can't feel my legs! In comes a meat wagon! And the medic gets out and says, oh my God! New guy's in the corner puking his guts out!
All because you want to save a couple extra pennies. And to me, it doesn't...
Get out.
I mean... Behind Belushi and maybe a handful of other guys, Phil Hartman, Chris Farley made SNL in the 90s what it was. Chris Farley, Tommy Boy is one of the best comedies of all time. I know that there were some kind of, you know, not so great enthusiasm and reviews for some of the later moves he did, like Beverly Hills Ninja, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm sorry, just between his SNL performances and the movie Tommy Boy alone, Chris Farley deserves nothing but respect as a comedic genius.
Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat.
And that's not even touching his legendary status at Second City here in Chicago.
New guy's in the corner puking his guts out.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. I think there's a lot of love for Chris Farley in this city, so adjust, which, you know, Twitter Nation, they were on him, and everybody who heard him say it. The bad thing for him is he didn't tweet it. He said it on live on air, and when they were doing the ESPN game, and then
Tommy Boy's that big non-funny guy, the Chris Farley.
The tweet started to come in, and rightfully so, Jason Benetti grilled him for it. And I was going to say too, Tommy Boy, between like Tommy Boy and Black Sheep and like some of the other movies that he did, and on
even
top
like
of
his cameos in like Coneheads and Wayne's World, like brilliant stuff.
So between all of that, and then like, yeah, his cameo too in Billy Madison, like with as the bus driver.
Oh my God. Like how often do people quote that? All the time. That Veronica Vaughn is one piece of ace.
So that I had to bring that up quickly just because we it's been a while since it's been 4 or 5 days since we've been on the mics. Needed to get that off my chest. I still like Dan Dockich as a radio host. I think he's awesome. He's funny. But that was probably one of the worst takes of all time.
And
I knew Chicago people would hate on it too.
Bad about that. He should go into hiding for at least a month until that blows over.
Do you validate?
All right, so let's get to our interview with Chris Bleck of ESPN 1000. But quickly, if you're not following us on Twitter or social media, you need to do so at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Make sure you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show. If you want to leave a review for us, it takes 30 seconds. It helps us. It helps us improve our show. It helps our standards on Apple so more people can see us. If you want to leave us a review, whether it's a 5-star review, 3-star review, whatever it is, we appreciate the feedback, positive and negative. Keep that coming. You can always send us a note on social media or at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com, whether it's a comment, question, you're mad about something we said. We love to hear the feedback from you guys. So, but without further ado, here's our interview with Chris Bleck of ESPN 1000.
Right now, we are very pleased to welcome to Locked On Bulls for the first time, Chris Bleck, who is a host and producer here at ESPN 1000 in Chicago. You can also catch him calling the UIC men's basketball games, the UIC Flames, with his ESPN 1000 colleague, Jonathan Hood. A lot of fun between those two watching college hoops here in Chicago. We're going to talk some Bulls with him right now. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Matt, Jordan, what's up, guys? How are you?
Doing well. All right, so first off, we got to get your thoughts on the new look Bulls coming out of the All-Star break. Significant minutes and starts for David Nwaba and Cristiano Felicio, and big minutes, the first minutes all season for Campaign coming off the bench as Jaren Grant is moved to a inactive, and the Bulls are looking at the guy whose option they picked up earlier this season. For next season, they're looking at a guy they signed to a 4-year, $32 million deal in Felicio, and a guy they took waivers on with a minor deadline deal in Noah Vonleh. What are your thoughts on these new look Bulls, and which of any do you think is obviously the obvious answer is David Nwaba, of people whose job is new post All-Star break, but outside of Nwaba, anything positive that you like that you see from these guys as far as potential moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, good question. I think when you look at the way this team is structured and the way they play throughout the season, this is kind of what people expected from the Bulls when they saw the Bulls trade Jimmy Butler on the draft day. So, like, the thing that I have gone to all season long is that this team had too much talent on it to tank from the start, and the management and the organization did not pull apart enough pieces to allow this team to be a bottom five, bottom three team. I know the Bulls are close, but they just have too much talent And they even have too much talent with the collection of guys who are getting playing time now. Because when you look at it, you know, David Nwaba, solid player. You know, he had 10-day contracts last year with the Lakers. So the Bulls did a really good job in scouting him out and saying, like, this guy can be an addition to our team going forward. They get him in the offseason. He's contributing. I like that. That's the type of guy and the type of move that you're going to have to make as an organization going forward to, like, get this team in the right spot, because you need to get the you have to win in the margins. You know, you obviously need to get the number one player on your team to be the best player, but you also have to win at the end of the roster. And usually with this organization, they haven't been winning recently at the end of the roster. So that leads to some other guys who are getting minutes. Campaign, atrocious. And I think we're seeing now that this guy's going to play himself right out of the league. I would be shocked in the next 2 years if he's on a team, because you've just seen nothing from him. He can't shoot. He doesn't command the ball. He's not even a good dribbler. And, like, you're a point guard, dude. Like, you don't even set guys up. That, to me, is a problem. So, like, those are two guys who are getting more minutes. Felicio, you know, the Bulls had to spend money to get to the floor in the offseason. But I don't know if he's going to be worth the contract that the Bulls gave him when they did, and he's going to be on the books for a couple more years. That might end up biting the Bulls in the long run, because when they say, hey, guys, we have some young pieces, and now we're going to actually try and make the playoffs, you might have Felicio still hanging around, and he's going to have to be your backup center. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to develop into that, but he's within the organization, so they're going to have to make something out of him. And, you know, going back to the initial answer to the whole question is, like, yeah, all season long, seeing Justin Holiday, who I like, and seeing guys like Mirotić play, who we've seen what he did this year, turning into a first-round draft pick for the Bulls, and Robin Lopez, all of these guys added to this collection that was too good to tank. So Justin Holiday, that's a guy on a good price that I think for the Bulls going forward, he is going to be someone that you like. Like, next year for $4 million for Justin Holiday is a really good backup shooting guard. But do you need that on your roster right now? Because he adds to something that's too good to bottom out. And I think you guys both understand that the whole point of all of this is, if you really are going to tank out the season, you have to commit to it. You can't be the team that has a bunch of fun players who try hard, and then you're the 12th seed in the East. You're missing the playoffs, but you're also missing out on the elite talent at the top of the draft. So, you know, I think what we've seen in the last couple of weeks is the young guys getting minutes. And I know a lot of people want to applaud John Paxson and Gar Foreman, especially John Paxson, for coming out in the media the other day and talking about how these guys are going to get minutes. But I just throw the hesitant out there and say, like, guys, this is how it should have been the entire season. I don't get why they're being applauded. Playing the young players and allowing guys to develop should have been the motto from day one, not after the All-Star break, because you're boxed into a corner and this is the only decision we can make.
I appreciate you saying that. And you had a lot of good stuff. I want to hit on a couple things that you said there. I appreciate you coming out and saying that you didn't think this team was good enough to go on full tank mode. And I said that early on in the season too, even just coming to training camp. And that was one thing that Matt and I had wrapped up in 2017 and talked about. And I said, you know, with the collection of what Nico Mirotić can do and what you expect him to do at 26, and Bobby Portis coming back and being fully healthy and having the expanded role, and some of these other guys that were trickled in here, you get a couple surprises in what you think Chris Dunn ended up being this year early on. Lauri Markkanen was better than expected early on. So I agree with that. And you have Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday out there. I'm curious what you think the Bulls will have to pay Nwaba this offseason. Obviously, he's going to be out there on the market and heavily considered by a lot of teams. What do you think he would command on the market? And would you mind the Bulls overpaying to keep him around? And also, what are your thoughts on Justin Holiday's value, I guess, in terms of looking around the league and saying, you know what, if we can acquire draft picks here or younger talent than Justin Holiday is, and he can help a competing team, you think there is any type of market out there for that and for Robin Lopez? Because I feel like a lot of people aren't talking about the market that there is this summer coming up right before the draft, where we hear a lot of names and a lot of rumors being thrown around.
Yeah, I mean, for David Nwaba, I mean, listen, he right this year he's on a minimum salary, $1.3 million. Going forward, free agent, if someone wants to offer him something that you don't want to match, then let him go. I mean, listen, he's a nice story, and it's nice to get guys like that in your organization, but by no means Am I letting some of my cap space go to keep around David Nwaba? I mean, let's be real. He hustles. He plays defense. He's got some nice offensive moves, but he's at no point going to change the direction of my franchise. So if he wants to go get bigger money and it's like way out of your price range, let him go. He's David Nwaba. Let's be real about that. Justin Holliday, I think he is valuable for the Bulls for next season. And it's all based on the fact that he's making $4.3 million. That, like, a guy like that is valuable. A shooting guard who can guard and shoot the ball well from three, that's a guy in a veteran presence. You know, he's 28. I like, he's also someone who has been around winning teams. He was on Golden State. So, like, I like Holiday at that price. So I would personally keep him around. I'm not sure if, you know, yeah, a guy like that might be valuable to other teams as far as, like, the fact that his contract is so low. But I'm not sure if they're going to be willing to give up a first-round draft pick for him, just because if you think about it, your first-round draft pick is going to be cheaper, and hopefully, in your eyes, he's a better player than Justin Holliday. So why would you give up that asset? And, you know, the same kind of goes for Robin Lopez. You know, one more year of Robin Lopez, I think he's just going to kick around with the Chicago Bulls, because if the Bulls could have gotten something valuable for him, wouldn't they have dealt him at this trade deadline? And the only reason I say that is because, like, also, think about his body type and the type of player he is on the floor. He is not a player that's in demand at all in today's NBA. He's a big who kind of stumbles around offensively, has very limited offensive game, good help defender, good team defender, but that's about it. A nice little passer, especially up around the free throw line. You know, like, he can do some things to help you out as a team. But at no point are teams looking around going, well, we need a guy like that on our squad. So why would they give up anything for a Robin Lopez? So I think next year, you know, if Nwaba's price is out of the pocketbooks of the Chicago Bulls, you know, range that they want to spend, then I understand that. And I think Lopez and Holiday will be here next year.
We're talking with Chris Bleck here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Bleck. Now, Chris, we're talking about some of these decisions the Bulls have to make, price tags that are going to be around pieces that they want to keep. So in that line of discussion, obviously the biggest thing the Bulls have to worry about this offseason, priority 1A, is re-signing restricted free agent Zach LaVine, who, when the Butler trade went down, most people kind of communally agreed was, at that time, even going through an ACL rehab, was the most valuable piece that the Bulls got in that Butler trade, a guy who was NBA experienced, has all that athleticism, et cetera, and still very young, just 21, 22 years old. What you've seen from LaVine thus far, and also what you've seen from the fast start and then maybe recently the rookie wall from Markkanen and the improved play and the increased amount of opportunities in the second year of Chris Dunn, do you still think that LaVine is the most valuable piece of the three? And what kind of money would you like to see the Bulls sign him to this offseason?
Well, Matt, let me ask you this. Without really thinking about it, is he a max player?
No, not in my opinion.
Nope.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, that's kind of where the Bulls are going to get stuck, because I have a feeling they're going to get backed into paying for a max player when he's not actually a max player. Just because, think of the optics. If they just let him go, if someone signs him to an offer sheet that's way out of their price range, and then there goes Zach LaVine, now people are going to say he was the piece that you traded Jimmy Butler away from for. You know, so, like, if he doesn't turn out, if he's not with you long term, what did you win this trade? You know, like, and the Bulls are very aware of public perception. And sometimes they let that guide them more than what's right to do with the team. You know, like, we all watch and cover this team, and we understand that they read and they listen and they watch everything. So they know what people say, and they know what people think. They know what C-Red Nation thinks. And I think to them, that's something that matters. And it kind of sucks if you're a Bulls fan, because, like, that shouldn't matter if you're building a great team, right? So, okay. Is he a max player? I don't think so. The one thing that I would throw out that a lot of people kind of forget is last year, remember, everyone said before he got hurt, he was having a great season, right, with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Well, yeah, he was before January. So he got hurt in February. So in December of last season, he was averaging 22.7 points per game. He was awesome. He was shooting 46% from three. That's a guy that I would say is trending towards max player level. He played 15 games in December. In January, he played 13 games, and his numbers dropped to 14 points per game, and his three-point shooting dropped to 33%. So, like, last year, he was only max player on the ascent, that type of guy, for a month of the season, even though people kind of look at last year and say, oh, well, all last year he was rising into this different player, and then he got hurt. No, actually, he was really good last December. He wasn't so good in January, and in February he got hurt. So I don't know. I haven't seen enough from him this year with the Chicago Bulls to say that, like, yeah, I feel comfortable that the real player that they're getting is the guy from December or the guy that played in January last season, because I think we've seen it as Bulls fans. I mean, he's pretty talented offensively. He still has explosion, and he can get to the rim. He's got a nice, quick three-point release, and when he hits, he's pretty good. He doesn't guard at all, so that's going to be a problem. It might not be as big of a problem since you're going to be playing him with a point guard who does play good defense, but you know, like, the key to why Golden State and San Antonio and some of these teams are so good is because all five guys can guard, not just one or three, you know, like, so Zach LaVine, is he a max player? I don't think so, guys, and I think that's going to be a tough thing this summer because the Bulls better get lucky and try and sign him before he gets to the point where he's trying to get max offer sheets from other people, because someone will give it to him, because there's going to be free money out there for everyone, you know, because there's not going to be that many available hot names out there, and he's going to be one of them.
Yeah, that was something that we had an extended conversation about, what his actual value is, and just kind of trying to compare some of the guards that are out there. And I want to rattle off a couple names for you, and you tell me whether or not Zach LaVine is better or worse than these players that I'm going to tell you right now. Victor Oladipo.
I mean, Oladipo has turned himself into an excellent player. I would say probably last year I would have leaned towards LaVine, but Oladipo got in the gym and worked on his game.
How about Allen Crabbe?
I think LaVine's a better player than Allen Crabbe.
Wesley Matthews?
Oh, Wes is tough because he's so good defensively, and he's a good, like, you can tell that the guys that play with him really like playing with Wes Matthews. I would probably take Wes Matthews.
How about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope?
See, that's tough because how old is Caldwell-Pope?
25.
See, like, that's where, like, some of this kind of swings in the favor of LaVine, because you say that he's 22, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, he's got, like, 5 years of development before he hits his prime, so there's a good chance that when he develops, he will be close to a max player, and the Bulls will be ready to give him a second max deal. So there you go.
So the funny thing is about this is why I brought all those names up is those were the list of shooting guards between 8 and 13 as far as money made. Victor Oladipo getting paid $21 million a year for the next 3 years. He signed that deal in Oklahoma City before the season even had started. Allen Crabbe's making $19 million. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is making $17.7 million. So this is the conversation that we were having, is like, where does LaVine fall into all of this? And more often than not, you were saying that you would take LaVine over some of these other players that we were talking about. So if he falls into this range of getting paid between 18 and $23 million, do you feel like that's a better deal? Or do you think that the Bulls are going to be hard-pressed to have to pay him a full deal that could escalate somewhere over $140 million over 5 years?
Yeah, no, I think that's what's going to happen, because I don't think you can necessarily look from 1 year to the next, because remember that everyone keeps talking about that not a lot of teams are going to spend this offseason. So that means the guys who are available, who are that good, worth spending money on, the teams with cap space are going to throw tons of coin at these players. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if his contract is more than Oladipo's. That wouldn't shock me at all, because it's going to happen. I mean, I don't think there's any question to that based on his potential, right? He's 22, and what we've seen so far, it looks like he's healthy coming off the injury. I think teams will spend the big money on him. Whether or not it's your team, I don't know if I want my team doing that, though. You know what I mean? Like, do you guys foresee him being a major piece to a winning championship team?
I think so, but I don't think he can be. I don't think he's going to be the number one when it's all said and done.
Yeah, there's a difference between being the number one on a championship team and being a key piece on a championship team.
Right. I mean, where does he fit in on that?
I'd say he could be a very strong number two on a championship caliber team.
Well, he's got to play some defense then.
Well, yeah, obviously, if he has a great point guard and a great wing on either side of him playing defense and you can kind of mask that, then yeah, I think he has the potential to be a number two on a championship team.
I mean, that's fair. He's also 22. I mean, I would just say, like, if you just guarantee that he's a max player, you know, like, okay, so here's my whole, like, skeptical viewpoint on it. You had a top 20 player in Jimmy Butler that you didn't want to play, you didn't want to pay. You trade him away to get a guy that you're going to end up having to give a max deal who may not ever be the player that Jimmy Butler is.
I completely agree with that. And I know that argument was huge when the trade and the deal was went down. And that's why I feel like there's a lot of things that stack up to tell me that Zach LaVine probably won't get the maximum money. And that's why I kept going back to Victor Oladipo's contract when he did sign it, coming off of Oklahoma City. Obviously, like you had said, he got himself into shape. He's playing phenomenal in the way that he was supposed to when he came out of the draft. I feel like his situation is sort of like Zach LaVine's. Obviously, Victor Oladipo being a 100 times better defensively than Zach LaVine is. But some of the things are there that Zach LaVine has that Victor Oladipo doesn't. And I feel like this is a similar situation. And the thing that I feel like that the Bulls have the biggest leverage over it, and to be whether it's fair or not, that can be argued, but it is the ACL. I feel like, you know, and maybe I don't know what he's going to be told from other teams that do have a ton of money to spend, but I feel like that's some type of leverage that the Bulls could have to kind of pull him in and rein him in a little bit. And also the factor too that he said he wanted to stay in Chicago, and how committed is he to saying that in the front office to him kind of pressing him on that a little bit?
Well, come on. I mean, guys say that though until they have to make a decision. I mean, listen, it's not like the three of us. Like, when you have all the money in the world, you can live wherever you want. You know what I mean? Like, that's like the old thing is, you guys know, like, people always say, oh, well, players don't want to go to this place because it's cold, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to play in Minnesota or Milwaukee or Chicago because it's cold. Well, last time I checked, I don't think rich people are quite living the Chicago lifestyle that I am. Like, I walk to work. And, like, when it's snowing or windy or rainy, I walk to work no matter what, or I get on the L, or I do all that stuff. Like, rich people go from their parking garage to the UC's parking garage, driving their fancy car, and at no point do they get outside. And if they need to stop somewhere, they stop at the valet in front of the restaurant, and they walk from the car in front of the restaurant right into the restaurant, and someone parks their car for them. You know what I mean? Like, they're not living the Chicago winter lifestyle we are.
No, I think it's totally overblown, that argument. And I mean, as far as the whole thing about, well, he said he wants to stay in Chicago. He wants to play here. Look, Jimmy Butler didn't want to leave. Jimmy Butler wanted to stay and be the guy. I think obviously in the back of his mind, he was also eyeing that DP, you know, designated player exception contract that he could have made for himself, assuming he met certain qualifications over the next couple of seasons. Because the Bulls could have given him a much bigger payday than anybody else.
Oh, so
clearly he was thinking about that. But I also think there is something to the fact that the Bulls are one of the most history-rich franchises in this league, other than debatably the Lakers and the Celtics. Like, there is no team in the NBA that is more adored with more rich history behind it than Chicago. And I think that big star players want to be the guy that gets the Bulls back to that mountaintop. It's who's going to bring the Bulls back to championships, or at least a championship, in the shadows of Michael Jordan. Rose wanted to be that guy. He failed. Butler wanted to be that guy. He failed. I truly believe that Zach LaVine does want to be that guy, or if not that guy, at least one of the guys to make the Bulls a relevant team again.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if that's the case, but I don't know. And that's why I keep going back to Jimmy Butler. Because I think if the way you look at it is that if the Bulls gave up a player of that caliber because they didn't want to commit long-term the money, remove the fact if Butler was going to win with them or not. Just think of it like under the fact of, well, they didn't commit the money to a guy who has proven it many years and many seasons within your organization. Now you're willing to commit this money to a guy who has not proven it. I just think it's kind of strange that you wanted to save all this cap space for the future, yet you're going to blow it all on Zach LaVine.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, I hope they don't blow it all on Zach LaVine. I think maybe even, seeing if he'd be open to the idea of doing a shorter term deal where he'll get a bunch of money in year one of like a 2-year deal or something like that. And then we'll get that opportunity to evaluate him further. And maybe he'd be open to that idea. But while we're talking about Butler and the fact that the Bulls did let him go, let's get your thoughts, Chris, on where Jimmy Butler is right now and where the Timberwolves are right now. Obviously, everybody who is on NBA Twitter or pays even remote attention knows that Jimmy is the biggest recent name to go down with a fairly serious injury, a tear in his meniscus. But the good news is it wasn't an ACL. He is expected to be back at some point this season before the playoffs, or at least by the time the playoffs arrive. Was your first thought when Jimmy went down, Tibbs plays this guy's too many minutes? Because that has been a very common thread on Twitter between Bulls fans and Timberwolves fans this season, even last season when Tibbs first took over in Minnesota. You mentioned, you think about some of the guys that got worn down under Tibbs, Joakim, Derek, Lou Wall, guys that played heavy, heavy minutes. Do you think that Tom Thibodeau has anything to do with this Jimmy Butler injury?
No. And this is why. And I think it's funny that many people on Twitter, that's the first thing they point to. But I also think that a lot of those people probably don't watch the league on a night-to-night basis. And they probably don't pay attention to the NBA. So all they know is that Thibodeau plays his guys too many minutes because they're Bulls fans. And they don't actually read up about how other guys in the league actually play big minutes. Let me give you guys a couple names. Is Giannis Antetokounmpo, is he injured right now?
No.
No. Is LeBron James injured right now?
No.
Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, Paul George, Bradley Beal?
No.
Two guys out of the top 10 most minutes played this season are injured. Jimmy Butler and DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, it's not a Thibodeau thing. It's a freak accident thing. Like, if Jimmy Butler was on any other team in the league, he'd still be playing these minutes. Now, I get that you have to have some kind of caution over the long span of a season, but when did Butler get hurt? He got hurt in the 2 minutes left in the third quarter, down 10 in a game in February. So what? Whenever you go down 6 points, 7 points, You just take out all your starters and you don't play anymore? Like, I don't understand what these people are talking about.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's just
there.
People who hate Thibodeau because they don't know anything else about basketball.
Right. And if C Red Fred is listening to this episode, I'm sure he's, burning alive.
Please with it. Please with the C Red Fred guy and his 2020 miracle of nonsense. Get out of here with that.
No, he's hilarious. I like to poke the bear. His argument was, well, don't look at this most recent injury when he goes down with the meniscus. Look at when Butler took 4 games off back in January with a sore knee, and he took those 4 games off to rest his knee and then comes back. And instead of easing him back into action, Tibbs was immediately using him like he's used him all season, as long as he's known Jimmy Butler. 35 minutes the first night back, 36, 38, 40, 37, 46, 41, 39. Any problem with the fact that as soon as Butler came back from nursing that sore knee, Tibbs gave him a full workload?
Well, I mean, okay, on the list of guys I rattled off, Anthony Davis has gotten hurt like every other week his entire NBA career, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why is he playing these minutes? Oh, wait, because he's a all-star level, top-of-the-line basketball player, and this is what they do. Listen, if you want to point to Thibodeau because he's playing a guy who's been medically cleared to play, who wants to play, and it's all Thibodeau's fault, then that's your deal because you just don't like Tom Thibodeau. That's fine. Do that. Be ignorant about the situation and go about your day and just hating on Tom Thibodeau. But you guys, I mean, you guys are smart. Think about it this way, right? Thibodeau is really smart. You think that if he was told by his team doctors that Jimmy Butler is not clear to play, that he's sending him out there anyway to play against doctor's orders? No. He's the front office and the coach. He knows what's going on. He has all the info. Yet they're playing him because that's what players do. Like, it's insane to me what some of these people who don't watch the NBA think that they know, because Derrick Rose got hurt twice with freak knee injuries and Tom Thibodeau was the coach, and all they wanted to do was yell about Tom Thibodeau in the minutes. That's what players do. They play those minutes. Like, I could keep going down the list. Like, Andrew Wiggins, has he gotten hurt this year?
Right.
He averages 36 minutes a night. Russell Westbrook, CJ McCollum, James Harden, Karl Anthony Towns, Kemba Walker, Gary Harris. I mean, you know, like, the top, like, 40 guys in minutes played this year, there's, like, three of them who are hurt. It's, like, Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, and John Wall. And that's it. Everyone else is fine. Because I know I'm being a little ridiculous with this, but Tom Haberstroh wrote a whole column on how NBA injuries overall are up like 50% this season, but this season's a longer year and they're spacing out the games, yet more guys are getting hurt. So what does that mean?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy too. And I was going to say, you're setting the fire to any of our fans that are Jimmy Butler fans and maybe anti-Tom Thibodeau. I'm in the same camp as you, is like, you can't just point to Tom Thibodeau and say that this is his fault. He plays his players too many minutes. Like, don't be that naive if you're a Chicago Bulls fan and sit here and tell me that Butler, if he's ready to go, he's not going to go to Tom Thibodeau and scream at him if he's only going to say, oh, you know what? You're only playing 20 minutes tonight. We want to ease you back in. Like, the Timberwolves are in a position where they need to make the playoffs. They want to make the playoffs. They haven't been there in forever. So for people to just blame this on Tom Thibodeau, it's like, those two have such a special relationship, and the type of player Jimmy Butler is and the competitor he is, it would be Butler's in there telling him and screaming in his office if he would tell him that, yeah, you're only going to play 20 minutes tonight, or you're only going to play 15 minutes tonight. So I'm in the camp with you too. And it's not like he got hurt, like you said. It's not like he got hurt in the last 90 seconds of a game that didn't matter. They needed him when he was in there, and it was non-contact injury. Which, I mean, it happens in basketball. So I'm in the same camp with you. I don't think Tom Thibodeau is to blame here. I think it's just a freak thing, and it happens.
Well, I mean, also, like, if you really want to get into the research and all this stuff, also look into, like, sleep studies, because it's also been pointed out that, like, your sleep cycle is more preventative about healing your body than maybe, like, the actual minutes that you're playing. So, like, the fact that these teams are traveling on the second night of a back-to-back or in between these 3 and 5 day trips, the sleep cycle getting messed up is probably worse for the player long-term for their health and their injury sake than the extra 3 or 4 minutes in the game. So I just think, you know, it's just easy because, you know, Johnny pom-pom Bulls fan who's sitting in the 300 section at the UC, who's, you know, like C-Red Doug or whatever his name is, you can't actually, you know, consume the product of the NBA. You just have to take the one blurb that everyone thinks that Tom Thibodeau plays his guys too much and then, you know, go nuts about it on Twitter. It's like, come on now. Look into the guys who are playing big minutes. Giannis leads the league in minutes played per game. He's not hurt, is he? I didn't think – oh, wait. Okay, so there's like two guys.
I mean, I don't want you to jinx this right now, Chris, because I can't wait to watch what Giannis does in the playoffs.
Hey, listen, injuries happen.
Yeah, they suck.
Basketball. And if you can figure out how to prevent it, then, like, you're going to be a multimillionaire because every team in the league is going to hire you because you're going to keep their guys healthy. So congrats. Definitely.
Yeah. All right, Chris, we want to get your thoughts on what's going on in NCAA hoops right now and how that might affect the NBA. But before we do that, real quick, mentioning the Jimmy Butler-less Timberwolves, the Thunder with Russ and Paul and Melo are doing some interesting things. The Rockets look amazing. Obviously, the Cavs were the big story at the trade deadline, totally overhauling their roster. Real quick. Are you buying the Cavs and still taking them to win the East? And is anybody upsetting the Warriors in the West?
Well, okay. So the Cavs, after the trades that they made, started off pretty hot. But then as we're seeing now, they've lost a couple of games in a row and they haven't looked good doing so. And the one thing that I kind of point to is, like, Rodney Hood is a good player, solid player. And, like, Clarkson, okay, solid player. But, like, also, if Clarkson was so good, the Lakers wouldn't have given him up, right? So, like, they did get younger, and they're going to be able to defend better. And I think you do have a better shot now at getting to the finals. But we all know that it comes down to whether or not if LeBron's being the best at his ability that he can be in late May, early June, then that team's going to get to the finals. I mean, I think it's interesting that Toronto right now has the best record in the East. I don't think they're going to have the firepower to take out either Boston or Cleveland. And the one thing that I'm hesitant with Boston is, like, I love the fact that Brad Stevens and the passing and the fact that they can guard all five positions. But the when it comes down to crunch time, and if you stop Kyrie Irving, who's going to be the second guy to step up? Is Jason Tatum ready to mature into that role? Is Jaylen Brown good enough to be the guy to be the second fiddle on a team that gets to the finals? I don't know. I think everyone's going to want Boston to get there. I just don't think they're going to be able to do it this year. They're probably a year off. And I think that's where you fall back to the fact that Cleveland just needs LeBron to be the best player in the Eastern Conference that final week in May.
Yeah, they just need LeBron to be LeBron, essentially.
Well, yeah, but you got to be careful of that, because LeBron was last year in the finals.
Good LeBron,
and
yeah.
They weren't even close to beating Golden State. So, like, you also have to put the caveat in there, because if people pay attention to what happened last year in the finals, yeah, the Cavs won one game, and they were blown out of three other games, and they lost one closely. So the finals weren't close whatsoever. When you get blown out of three games and you lose the finals, you're not close. And LeBron was awesome last year in the finals. So, I mean, if he's playing well, I think they have enough around him to get there. But I think this might be the end of that for Cleveland in the East. Now in the West, you know, Houston is so intriguing because they play the new age style of basketball. They've got, you know, both Harden and Chris Paul are mixing the minutes. So you're never on the court without one of the guys. And Harden's definitely the MVP at this point in the season. But, like, have the Warriors turned it on yet? You know, like, Steph came out of the All-Star break in like his first and second game back, and he's starting to look like Steph from last year and the year before. And I think the Warriors just didn't really give a crap about the first half of this season, especially Durant. Like, he's going through the motions right now. Draymond's kind of going through the motions. This team's going to turn it on when we get to the playoffs. And I think Golden State will still win out in the Western Conference, even though it will be a really fun Western Conference Finals, the Rockets and the Warriors.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, too. And it'll be interesting to see what the Rockets can do and if they can handle what Golden State's doing. And I feel for everybody who says, like, obviously the amount of talent that Golden State has on their team, but it's a different type of battle when you feel like you're going into an arena every single night and there is lack of competition. From their standpoint, you can see how that can get old. And for an NBA grind, they just have to figure out, I feel like, different ways to cope with that. And you're kind of seeing that, how they get through an NBA season without becoming bored, going in, night out. But I wanted, the most important thing here, as we kind of wrap this up, I wanted to touch on the NCAA scandal going on, because this topic has me so intrigued. And I feel like anybody who is an NBA fan, college basketball fan, or a mix of both should be. And I have been reading up on all of these scandals that have been coming out now, obviously with players being paid, names that are notable that have been noted from Yahoo Sports in their big profile. Miles Bridges, Colin Sexton, Kevin Knox, Wendell Carter, and obviously the big one in DeAndre Ayton and Sean Miller with the wiretaps. Give me your breakdown and your overall overarching opinion of what's going down, how this has sort of trickled out now, and where you see this kind of going for not only the NCAA, but what kind of impact it might have on the NBA, if any.
Well, it may impact the NBA to start really considering getting a G League team for every single team that's in the NBA. So every team is matched up with a G League team. And then it might push them to a point where the next time the NBA revisits collective bargaining agreement, that you might be able to choose to just for past college basketball or going to school to be able to enter the NBA as long as you have the safety net of playing for the G League team. So basically, it would turn into a minor league system for the NBA. And I know that most people in the NBA would probably be for that because, you know, LeBron James today came out saying that that's something that he'd be interested in, because if you watch European soccer, all the teams have the ability to sign guys when they're like 15, 16 years old. They go to the academies, you know, they're playing for the Real Madrid Academy when they're like 15. And then if you make it through their academy system, you then play for the major club when you get to like age 18, 19, whenever you're able to get up there. So I think it's possible, because like even go back to a few years past, Mark Cuban has always been on this. And the thing that Cuban always says is like, if a guy's within my system, I feel more comfortable about his development than sending him to college where he can only practice for 25 hours a week. I don't know what his dietary habits are. I don't get to monitor his sleep, all this. I don't get to train him, all this other stuff. So like Cuban's always been all about, if you're 18, you want to enter the NBA, I would rather have you in my system so I can offer you the best in the world to get the max out of you. And like it, that really makes a lot of sense. So when you look at college basketball, like, listen, I think you're naive if you didn't think that something like this was going on. I think it's probably much more widespread than what's been reported. And I think when we get to the tournament, I don't think anyone will care, because they'll fill out their little brackets and then you'll sit around and watch games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's mainly just the first weekend until you get to the Final Four, because, you know, it's not that exciting once you pass the first week. Weekend, and then you'll get to after the season sometime, whoever wins, they'll get a banner, and then we'll take down the banner, because that's what the NCAA does, because they're righteous. So they hand out the banner, they say, you're the champion, and then they come back 2 years later, and they say, here, Reggie Bush, you didn't win the Heisman Trophy, even though everyone watched you win the Heisman Trophy. Give this trophy back to us. Now we're going to keep it for ourselves. Like, it's just stupid. The NCAA is idiotic, and that's just what they do. It's a corrupt system. But, like, what's the end in all of it, right? Do you pay players? I don't think you can pay all the players, right? Like, how do you defer paying a college football player to, like, a college soccer player? Like, why? Like, what's the difference? Oh, well, they make more money. Okay, but what if there's a soccer player that makes money for, you know, like, how do you determine that? I mean, I think the only thing that you could do is just, for the NBA specifically, it's just get rid of the age requirement. If a guy wants to go pro, let him go pro. You know, like the one thing that, and I'd like to hear what you guys think about it, is like, personally, I don't understand why people are so bent out of shape about a kid going pro at 18 to make a couple million bucks, when like the alternative is, say he busts out of the NBA and then he has to go to college. You know, I went to college when I was 18, but if I could have gone to college when I was 20 or 21, but I had $3 million in my bank account, I think I would be pretty damn successful going forward. You know what I'm saying? I don't think
a lot of people with $3 million in their bank account would say, screw that, I'm not going to go to college at all, whether it's 18 or 20.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you have the money and the finances to do so, you can go to college at any point. Like, why did we in society come up with this thing where the only way to be successful is by going to college? Just so we could have debt in the future?
Well,
you know what I mean? Honestly, there are many people who are successful who don't go to college. And there are many things that you learn from going to school, but it's not the end all be all. You know, That's like a flaw in just like our generation, is that you have to go to college.
Yeah,
you
know, but I mean? Chris, like, I mean, come on. You hear the occasional story about a professional athlete, where it's NBA or otherwise, who decides at some point in his 20s or maybe even after they retire, when they're in their mid to late 30s, I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to get my degree in whatever field it is that, you know, that interests me. But really, if you're talking about percentages, what percentage of athletes, professional athletes that make these millions and millions that you're talking about, decide at any point that going back to college is something they want to do? Because I don't think that
what does it matter? They can make that decision. That's for them to make. But it's probably a healthier decision made if they have $2 million than having no money at all.
I would agree with that.
See, to me, if you have that money, I think that informs your decision, and almost 100% of the time would make that individual say, I got these millions in my bank account. Who the hell needs college?
No, I think that's typecasting the type of person that'd be making that money. I think people have the information. No
professional
one said that
athletes?
No one said you have to go to school from 18 to 22. Like, that's the flaw in, like, our entire society is built upon, is that high school kids have to go directly to college and then leave college and then go try and find a job and then pay off all their student loans. So, like, if you have the money already and you know that you're comfortable and you can choose what to do with your life, why wouldn't people do that? I don't see why. But, like, so my whole point is, why are people so outraged that a kid might go to the NBA and actually get money and then have the ability to make his own decision about his life, opposed to the alternative of being forced to go to school, being a fake college athlete, and then playing for the school, but getting paid under the table and then getting their banners taken away afterwards because you had to go through this whole process?
Well, that's just stemming from guys who wear the school colors of wherever they thought they went 10, 20 years from now, and then those are the same type of people that get so angry on Twitter that they're 45 years old and they're screaming at a 17-year-old decommitted from their school. Like, I'm with you on this. And I think that this is why, and Matt'll laugh at me, but this is why I thought when LeVar Ball came out, and whatever you think about LeVar Ball, him's trying to start a league that will pay guys outside of having to go internationally, which at 18 years old or at 17 years old, that's a huge life commitment. I can't say myself that I could go across to another country and be a professional at 18 where I don't know anything just to make the money. Like, somebody deciding whether or not there is a league here that could be a step up, a farm system, if you will, for the NBA, for these players. And even to resolve that for the NCAA, if you don't want to get rid of NCAA sports as we know it, or the capacity that we consume it and these players that help these programs, let the kids play and earn money for their likeness. Everybody else in college can, if you're not a student athlete. YouTubers who make millions of dollars that are still 20, 21 years old that are going to college at the same time, they're allowed to go out and make money. I think that the NCAA can make this all go away by letting players make money off their own likeness. It won't completely go away, but I can see it from the NBA standpoint. Like, if you can ramp up this G League and figure out a way to get every team a farm system and say, you know what, at eight, if you come out of high school and you want to come and play professionally, or even before that, we've got a place where you can do that. I think that to me, people shouldn't be concerned about what everybody else does with their life and what they're doing. And I think that stems a lot from people who think that their fan base needs this star at their program for 18 months.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just get bothered by it because I feel like someone telling someone that they can't make money is something that someone says who has money, and it's something that they say to people who don't have money. And, like, that just bothers me because, like, if you don't have money, you need to try and do everything in your power to obtain enough money to live comfortably, right? So, like, who are you to tell someone that they can't do that? And that's what bothers me about the whole situation, is that if there's someone that wants to pay an 18-year-old to be a part of their corporation, if it's Facebook, Google, wherever, they're going to do it. They're not going to sit around and go, well, you got to wait until you're 22 because of this, that, and the other. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it seems silly to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're all in agreement there that the one and done is dumb. And, you know, the NBA and NCAA and maybe the G League, you know, somebody's got to come up with an alternative. And maybe it is just letting guys go to the NBA straight from high school like they used to. And certainly some people who did that have left their mark on the league and then some. Chris, you have been very generous with your time, so we will let you go in a minute. Just one final question. Obviously, we are one of a handful of Bulls podcasts here in Chicago. There's a lot of great Bulls content for everybody who loves this team. Even with that, hey, Jordan and I love the competition. I'm sure Bulls fans in this city love the variety of options they have when it comes to getting their Bulls content. When are we getting Bulls Buzz back on ESPN 1000? Can you answer that question?
Well, you'll have to talk to Adam Delavitt about that, program director at ESPN 1000. What happened, obviously, is one, the team isn't very good right now. So it's tough to push for shows like that when the team's not great. And two, they're obviously not on our airwaves. So it was a show that aired, for those listening to the podcast who don't know, it was a show that aired after Bulls basketball games would air on ESPN 1000. So the Bulls would have their network post-game show with Steve Cashel, and that would run like a half an hour after the game. And then Jonathan Hood would be on for about 2 hours after that show on ESPN 1000. And when the Bulls left 1000, Bulls Buzz kind of left with it because the team isn't on our air anymore. So I think the answer in long to you, Matt, is this. When they're good again and playing meaningful games, I think it will be easier to convince my bosses to allow us to do the show.
Hopefully someday in the not too distant future, we'll be able to get it back. But in the meantime, you can catch Chris Black on ESPN 1000 airwaves as both a host and a producer. He does great production work, regardless of which shows he's working on at ESPN 1000. You can also catch him calling UIC Flames Man of Basketball games here in Chicago with his ESPN 1000 colleague, Jonathan Hood. Hey, Chris, everybody should be following Chris Black on Twitter, at Chris Black. He's a great Twitter follow. You tell my guy, Jay Hood, to quit ducking me and come on this podcast, all right?
All right, I'll let him know.
All right, thanks for sharing your time with us, Chris. We really appreciate it.
All right, Matt, Jordan, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We want to thank our guest, ESPN 1000 radio host and producer, Chris Black. He's a big Bulls mind, and obviously I hope you enjoyed his conversation. We enjoyed it a ton. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. DashRadio.com or the Dash Radio app. It's 100% free, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year of basketball talk from all around the league. Some great and phenomenal programs on the Nothing But Net channel. So go check that out. The app is free. It's free to listen to. You get it on any provider. So Dash Radio, DashRadio.com as well. Follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to check out all of our content at LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We're doing mailbag tomorrow, so make sure you get your mailbag questions in for us either at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com or over on Twitter or Facebook. I'm going to try and set up a text line for you guys. So even if you're sitting listening during a show, you're sitting somewhere and you're listening, you can quickly text us in. It'll go straight to our email. We'll be able to see that. Be an easier way for you guys to get us questions as well. And maybe if you've got a comment or a concern while you listen to the show, we'd love to hear it from you. But for Jordan and Matt, for our guest, Chris Black of ESPN 1000, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.